There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jenny hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, broadcasting to you in beautiful high-definition audio, or something quite like it, from the hallowed halls of Trinidad World Recording Studios, my beautiful studio here in Fort Worth, Texas. Fans, PH, how are you doing out there? Phil here, talking to you once again on the P2 Podcast. Forgive me, please. I beg your forgiveness, as we have had crazy stuff happening here in Phil World. Oh, man, crazy stuff that has inhibited my routine output of podcasts. Oh, regrettably, it's just a little more inconsistent these days, as you have so painfully figured out. I aspire to keep them more consistent here in the days to come. A lot of stuff to talk about. A lot of stuff going on here. But let me just let you know what's going on here at Trinidad World Recording Studios, your beloved home base of Phil Pritchett and the full band here. Oh, big news happening here in Fort Worth, Texas. Big news on the Pritchett front, and it is the following. Trinidad World Recording is on the move. Trinidad World Recording is on the move. What's going on, Phil? What's going on? I'll tell you what's going on. Oh, man, it is with excitement as well as with a heavy heart that we look forward to this next phase of Pritchett Studio Recording, etc. Indeed, fans, indeed. My little office that was in the building there in off of Lancaster over on Erie Street, I will still be recording there. Of course, let it be said this way. Let me put it this way. The big room you've all recorded in back there were Pritchett and so many others like me who have used the room. We're still going to be using the room, the big, huge, beautiful Pro Tools room back there. That's where I'm still going to be recording. But I had a little office in there. Those of y'all probably been in my office. It was a smaller room, a cozy, a creative space, guitars on the wall, all my vinyl records and stuff like that in there. But, man, I no longer will be having my own little office in that building anymore. Still recording there, but my office is on the move. So I'm out kind of looking around after being there for, gosh, I guess we were there 6 or 7 years. There's kind of two parts to the studio process. You got where your tracking space back there, and then I've got my little office slash mixing area also in the room. So that is the only change. My office mixing area is now no longer in that building. Are you following me here? So, temporarily, here at the Pritchett compound in Fort Worth at an undisclosed location. Just got my little basic set up here. So I can communicate, so I can podcast, so I can stay connected to what's going on, to you the fans, to broadcast the news to you out there. So I sit here in my own little room off the kitchen here, podcasting away, looking at the dirty breakfast dishes. That's what's going on. Exciting things. But let me put the word out to all you fans out there, especially those in Fort Worth. Now, if you were in Dallas or near Dallas-Fort Worth and you had the ultimate space, hey, call me, 817-733-5256, or email me, phil@philpritchett.com. Because I am in the market. What I would like to ultimately do is find a new space for the studio, perhaps. It can be just an office mixing room. Or if it was something large enough, you know, where I could have a whole tracking space and that kind of thing there, I would be interested. It's always with a heavy heart I do these things. You're always looking for more space. We're musicians, man. You know, we can't afford huge rent, and we can't just sew up some lease for years on end. So we're always moving into some place. Remember my old place in the stockyards above the Cadillac Bar? No heat, no air conditioning. But it was a great place there for a couple of years when I first started producing albums. We did the High Tide and the Heartland record up there. Several tracks of ours from the first Blueprint Garage outtake record were recorded up there. So it's tough, man, being a musician looking for large space because you're kind of at the whim of whoever, you know, owns the building or who's next to the building. You're playing drums. You're making noise. So it's kind of tough because every time I move into one of these places with all my gear, it's sort of, it's always kind of a sweetheart deal. And there's always sort of the thing like, hey, man, if we got to use the space for something else, Phil, you might have to move on unless you can really jack up the rent kind of deal. But hey, don't get me wrong, no hard feelings to any of the places the studio have been. I've always been super, super lucky about where I've got to be. But as is the way of things in this business, the search goes on. So I have conducted a wide search here, man. It's been a lot of fun. It's always, you hate to leave where you are, but it's always exciting going to look at space, you know, driving out, looking at some guy's barn or garage out in the country or something like that. So the search has ranged far and wide. I've even been out, you know, I'm kind of in that my house is in Fort Worth. I'm kind of on the southwest part of town. So I've kind of looked out Aledo, Weatherford, down near Crescent, Granbury, out in the country a little bit. You can get a little more for your money out there. I've looked at a lot of places, downtown Fort Worth, Stockyards, the Magnolia area, TCU area. But that's kind of high cotton, you know what I mean? Kind of high rent. Where some musician like P2, man, doesn't want to be coughing up just all of his cash to have some cool little rehearsal recording space. So the search continues. So by all means, folks, if you're out there listening, you're thinking, hey, man, I've got this 2 or 3 acres out here outside of Fort Worth. Yeah, man, we got that old, cinder block building out there. Phil could sweep it out and have a studio in there, pay us some money. Hey, by all means, shoot me an email, phil@philpritchard.com. Trinidad, continuing on. Man, I'm still working on projects here with guys that we've been recording. And all of y'all that have been inquiring about the studio, we're still going to be in the big space there. I foresee myself tracking at the studio we've been tracking at over in Handley on Erie Street. Still got a great deal there with Larry Dillon and all the guys in the building. So we'll be recording there. I just might be mixing it here at the Pritchard Homestead. Who knows, man? Who knows unless something else comes up. So that is what is going on, man, and that is why some of the delay has occurred in the podcasts as some of my gear has been unplugged in the van in transit out of the building. Oh, man. You know what? I sometimes forget how I hook this stuff up. You know, you make so many adjustments through the years. You plug this in, get something working, cool, cool, cool. And, man, you look behind my little desk in the office, monitors, speakers, Mackie big knob controller, keyboards, MIDI cables. And, dude, I just got there's just thousands of, hundreds of cables just hanging off the back of my desk. Some of them, I'd unplug, trying to do something else. There might be a cable back there that's not plugged into anything. It's just sort of hanging amongst the other cables. And it can be quite confusing. So I was just taking pictures with my iPhone of this, where everything's plugged in. It's like, what holes everything's plugged in to the interfaces and the preamps and all that kind of stuff. So I had to relearn it all again. But it's given me a great sense of, I don't know, it's good, I think. A fresh start. All these places I've recorded in and officed in over the years, I always feel like after like 4 or 5 years, I'm kind of in there you're looking at the same four walls. It's like, a lot of my productivity, at least from a writing standpoint, tends to happen when I first move into a space or if I get a new guitar or something. That's why I'll be excited about being there and using a new instrument or, using the organ or some new piece of gear I've got. And you tend to work more with it and write more songs and things like that. But, I don't know. After a while, things sort of kind of level off, and you're just looking at those same four walls. You're like, man, maybe I need to shake it up a little bit. So, I feel like it's coming at a good time, man. We're shaking it up, moving it around. I'm looking for that big space, though, man. If you got that loft somewhere or that empty warehouse full of garbage, you're like, man, what are we going to do at this place? Hey, man, I know Pritchett will come in here. Throw down those Santa Fe-style rugs, roll in the Hammond organ and all those old amps and guitars, and start rocking it out, man, and paying a little rent while he's at it. Come on, let me know. Phil at philpritchett.com. Well, thanks a lot, folks, for hanging in there with us. I want to talk to you about a man, I got so much great feedback from the Sammy Hagar podcast. Remember that Sammy Hagar autobiography I read a couple of months back? Got a lot of feedback from that on Sammy. Great guy, you know, rocking it out, Van Halen and the like. I unabashedly love the rock autobiography. Not biography, mind you. I like the autobiography in the artist's own words. Well, here at the end of the year, around Christmas time, I stumbled upon the gift of Rod Stewart, man. Rod Stewart, Rod the Autobiography, given to me as a gift. I kind of thought, oh, well, I'll get to that at some point. May I start reading it? Of course. Riveted. Rod Stewart, man, you're thinking to yourself, listen, Phil, God, Rod Stewart, some bronzed, hair-dyed, disco, pink pants, good grief, man. What are you talking about, Rod Stewart, man? He's a sellout. He's just some bloated, puffed-up L.A. guy. Hey, and I hear you. I hear you, man. But let me send you back. Let me send you back to the late 60s, early 70s, man. The Faces. Rod Stewart's solo career. Every picture tells a story. Maggie May, Mandolin Wind. All the stuff with the Faces, Gasoline Alley, his album Gasoline Alley. Dude, let me tell you what. In the early 70s, Rod Stewart could do no wrong. Could do no wrong. Check the record. Or records, I should say, as I have so many times. Some of you guys out there who only know Rod Stewart as the guy who marries and divorces supermodels and lives in L.A. and does standards, the story, the songbook, and all that kind of stuff. Go back and check out these two records, at least. Every Picture Tells a Story, Rod Stewart, and Rod Stewart, Gasoline Alley. Do yourself a favor, man. Go to Spotify right now. Pull it up, man. Gasoline Alley. Every Picture Tells a Story. He's got Ian McClagan, now lives in Austin, who I've met. I played with him at the Saxon Pub or opened up for him one night. Of the Faces on a Hammond B3 organ. McClagan was in that band. You also had, of course, Ron Wood, who I've also met. I realize I've met some of the Faces. Rod Stewart's band. I met Ron Wood. I've told you the story on 6th Street that night, about 1992. Me and my friend James Hathaway on a drunken spree on 6th Street. Someone goes, hey, man, Ron Wood of the Rolling Stones is in this bar. We went in there and sure enough, there he was, man, and got his autograph. Ronnie Wood, man. Well, Ronnie Wood ran around with Stewart, Ian McClagan. They made some great records in the early 70s. But check out especially Gasoline Alley. Every picture tells a story. Rod Stewart doing no wrong. Well, the essence of this book, which that was really startling to me, was the young Rod Stewart himself. Growing up in sort of blue-collar London, you know, he's sort of a Cockney guy. Dad was a plumber. Of course, all these guys care about is soccer. British football, man. Watching football. And Rod is a big Celtic fan. Or is it Celtic? What is it? Celtic. Scottish football is his real passion, Rod Stewart. His dad was a Scottish guy. So he's really into the Scottish football. He goes to all these tournaments. Still to this day, Stewart is like the world's biggest soccer fan. International, Scottish football fan. In fact, many times in the book, he says, when I look at my tour schedule for the year, I just go through and I scratch off, well, here's the championship, here's the World Cup, you know, whatever's going on. He just blocks out those dates, blocks out those weekends, blocks out those weeks where he will be attending soccer matches, football matches, and on the pitch, which I thought was really great. Something else real endearing about Stewart, indeed, there's a ton of pictures in his autobiography of Rod and his four or five brothers and sisters. He comes from a big family. His mom and dad were married forever and had a real tight family. And that was real appealing to me. I thought that was pretty cool. Maybe Stewart himself's been divorced a lot, but his parents were married forever. Brother, very close with his brothers and sisters. So there's tons of pictures in there of Stewart with a tumbler of scotch and the spiky hair, just with his, Celtic jersey on, and all of his brothers. He goes, I'd get the jet, man. We'd fly the whole family to all the soccer matches. We still do that. And they all go to see football matches together. And, Rod goes home and visits his parents and goes to their anniversary party every year. And a lot of endearing stuff like that in the book. Apart from the models and the cocaine, he's also a good family guy. So, Rod, it's hard not to like him reading this book. He's very, very self-deprecating, making fun of himself at every turn, making fun of his hair and, his ego and all the things he's hung up on. So it's very endearing. He kind of takes a great sense of humor about his life and his career and everything like that. But beneath that, I found very appealing his devotion to his family and his brothers and sisters and his parents and all that kind of stuff. Kind of cool. Most guys just grow up hating their parents or whatever, all these rock and roll dudes. But not old Rod, man, still hanging in there. Staying close to the family unit. There's some great stuff in there about the early days of Rod starting out. Of course, he had that unique voice, man. Say what you want to about Rod Stewart. It's like Willie Nelson's guitar or other things like that. When you hear it, it could be out of context in some mix. When you hear his voice, just like, just that kind of frog in the throat, raspy voice, you just go, man, that's Rod Stewart. There's no question about it. So he's got this distinct voice. He's in these early bands. He's not much of a writer. He's not much of a guitar player. He's just kind of a singer. He falls in with a couple of bands, Long John Baldry and some folks like that. And he's hanging out in clubs with the Stones and the Who and the Beatles and the, late 60s, mid-60s London. And it's very much in the scene. Spiky hair, getting drunk all the time. He's always drinking, orange juice and vodka. That's his drink. He's always a big... big drinker, not a smoker, not a big drug guy, really, Stewart. It wasn't until the later 70s where he confesses to, doing lots of cocaine and stuff like that. But as he said, he was always kind of a dabbler. Of course, that's maybe what he said. But Rod Stewart, he definitely does not have the reputation of having a bunch of overdoses. Oh, he's just strung out stuff, like a lot of his contemporaries were. So Stewart, he was one of those guys that could always kind of drink a lot and always party and stuff like that, but... He always kind of had limits on it and always kind of kept coming back to just his music and, going to soccer matches and stuff like that. There's a great passage in there about his old buddy, Elton John. You know of whom I speak? Elton John! Love Elton John. Well, of course, he was around getting things rolling there in the late 60s and 70s in England. He and Rod were good buddies and... he just said Elton John could party anybody under the table. There were many nights, he goes, we'd go over to Elton's for dinner. We'd stay late, stay up all night drinking. He said, man, I'd be up, and we'd have to go to a soccer. We were going to a soccer match the next day. And, Elton would just, he could just not sleep. He could just stay up all night long. Stewart goes, man, I would just pass out on the couch or something. And then, Elton just wake me up. Just, come on, man, come on. He's just wake up. It's like 6 in the morning. Elton's just like showered, shaved. In a full suit, just ready to go out the door to the soccer match, and never shows any sign of being hungover or anything. Of course, Stewart makes a lot of jokes about Elton being gay. It's pretty funny. He goes, man, Elton, it's just a little too gay for me, his house. He says, pink. He's got to be staying in some room with pink curtains and lace and, a bunch of priceless Chinese dolls, little girl dolls on the bed. I'd have to move off, 200... antique dolls so I could go to sleep. He goes, man, I was always really creeped out, all those dolls watching me sleep. That's kind of creepy. This is like a horror movie. Spending the night at Elton's after a long night of partying. Oh, man. But the book is full of great stuff like that. Golly, he had every woman in the 70s. Britt Eklund. I can't even remember their names. They're all in the book there. Of course, every model, every Bond girl, Stewart just casually mentions having a shag with her on a boat once, over a couple of glasses of wine. He had them all, dude. Rod Stewart. Oh, then he finally gets married. And he's been divorced 4 times. The one that really broke his heart was Rachel Hunter. Remember, that was in the 80s. She was the it girl, late 80s, early 90s. Rachel Hunter. I didn't realize she was so freaking young. Of course, I'm getting old. But I was, Stuart was like 45. He marries Rachel Hunter. Rachel Hunter was like 21 when they got married, or 22. And he said, man, it was the first wife that I didn't cheat on. So he's devoted to Rachel Hunter. They were married 5 or 6 years, 7 years, something like that. They had a couple kids. And he just goes, man, I was having the time of my life. Rachel was great because we were building this house. I went to Rachel. I was like, hey, you know, what do you think about this type of roof or something like that? She just looks at him and goes, I'm not going to be around for that. He's like, hey, what do you mean? I'm not going to be around for it. And that was the end. Poor Rod. He goes, man, I was always the jerk in every relationship I'd ever had my whole life. I'd meet someone, sometimes marry him, then I'd screw around, move on to the next thing. Yeah, I was terrible. He goes, I meet Rachel. I just totally clean up. I totally stay devoted. I moved up. I was 40-something years old. I'd grown up and just got blindsided. He just goes, man, it's the only time in my life where I just completely had my heart broken, man, was when Rachel Hunter divorced him. And recently, Rod had a great quote. He's a very quotable and very funny guy. This wasn't in the book, but I read it a while back, that Rod said, I guess after his third or fourth divorce, whatever it was, he said, you know what? They asked if he'd ever get married again. He said, I'm not going to get married again. I think I'm, rather than going through the process of getting married, I think I'm going to find, just go ahead and find a beautiful woman that I don't like and just buy her a house. Rather than going through the rigmarole of marriage and kids and getting everything, he goes, I'm just going to skip it all. I'm just going to find a beautiful woman that I hate and buy her a house. Just go straight to that point in the relationship process. So that's what Rod Stewart is doing, man. Although recently, I guess in recent years, he has gotten married again. And, you know, he's got like a 2-year-old kid now. He's freaking 70 or something like that. Late 60s anyway. So anyway, old Rod Stewart, great read. Rod, the autobiography. I don't know if it'd give you a real respect for his music or his... But man, most of all, it's just an entertaining read. And a guy that just... Man, he was just such a huge star. Especially in the 70s, man. And as much as you hated Do You Think I'm Sexy and all those were number one hits, man. International hits. I was found myself thinking, and this is kind of on a different subject here. No doubt that Rod Stewart, he was, when the late 60s were around, he was kind of a flower powery, mod, British rocker kind of guy. He changed with the seasons. Early 70s, man, just that rootsy rock stuff, the Faces, that was Rod Stewart. Then when disco came in, Stewart rolled in with disco. You know, he got the scarves and the tight pants, started shaking his butt around and whatever, all that stuff. He was disco, but man, he was stayed at the top of the charts. Into the 80s, man. Young Tax, Be Free Tonight, Forever Young, with the keyboards. And his sound and his look evolved with the times, even though he always kind of had the spiky hair and he was always Rod Stewart. He evolved with the 70s and 80s and 90s, I would say, and as a result, stayed on the top of the charts. However, that music he made in the 80s and 90s, you kind of look at now as dated. You're kind of like, ah, oh, that was the 80s, and there's Stewart in the disco era, gag, or whatever. But it's interesting. So I think a lot of his music does not age very well because it was tied to the certain times. But it did keep him at the top of the charts. The other way of going about that is the guys like Neil Young, the guys like, oh gosh, man, all those early 70s guys, Van Morrison, that were great in the late 60s, early 70s. And man, when disco hit, those guys that did not change their sound, you hear what I'm saying? The guys that would not change and start playing disco stuff, Neil Young et al., they disappeared. They vanished from about 1977 through about, till grunge, you know, till Nirvana and Pearl Jam said these guys were cool again. Really, if you think about it, there's a lot of truth to that. They were just gone in the 80s. No one knew where, you know, Neil Young was or, Crosby, Stills, and Nash or, you know, any of those dudes. They all kind of emerged again in the 90s as they got back into vogue again. Whereas a guy like Rod Stewart stayed at the top of the charts. I think the Stones, to a lesser extent, were like that. I mean, Miss You, and the Stones had a lot of disco-infused tunes in the late 70s. You know, had some keyboardy stuff in the 80s. A little bit. I mean, not to the extent Rod Stewart did, for sure, but the Stones did stay out there a little bit. So it's kind of interesting. As I kind of found myself thinking, man, was it better to evolve with the sound of the times to stay on top of the charts and stay in the public eye as Rod Stewart did? Or was it better to just maybe vanish for 10 years? But then at the end of that 10 years, when you're cool again, you retain. There's probably no doubt that Neil Young retains more integrity today than Rod Stewart. Wouldn't you say that's probably true? Anyway, it's interesting. But Stewart has been in the public eye and been at the top of the charts, really, his whole career. Whereas Neil Young, a guy like that just vanishes for years. Bob Dylan, no one knew where he was in the 80s. Anyway, an interesting food for thought question. Shoot me your thoughts on all this. Phil@philpritchett.com. Let me know your thoughts on Rod Stewart and everything else. And, of course, let me know if you got some space, a garage, a barn, a warehouse, an office in the Fort Worth area that you're not using. You know a guy with a building who's a fan, or, oh, man, Phil, he's got this warehouse behind his office. He never uses it. You could go in there, you know, pay a little rent, sweep it out, clean it up, you know, whatever. I'm in the market, man. Like I said, I'm okay now. I've got places to record. I got places to mix and an office and things like that. But, man, I'm kind of always looking for kind of the next thing, and I'm very much on the move. Pritchett, on the move, 2013. Well, 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 folks, that is our show for this week. Aspiring to get back into the swing of things here, man. Settling in, looking for a new home for Trinidad. Talking about Rod Stewart and so much more. Also, let us know if we can come play for you anytime soon. We're booking up those private parties in the spring and summer already, 2013. Phil@philpritchett.com. We'll come play for you. We're dead to do it. We'd love to do it. Roll in, play. Solo, band. Oh, man, we've been playing at the Mansion on Turtle Creek in Dallas. Can you believe it? The biggest, fanciest hotel in Texas, or at least Dallas, the Mansion. Our friend Ryan Harvey, an old fan and a great guy, manages the place, came to us and said, hey, man, I know it's not your usual gig, but we pay some pretty good money for bands on Fridays and Saturday nights. So, man, Phil Pritchett and the full band, we're playing once a month at the Mansion in Dallas, and it's just been a blast, man. There's all these famous people in there. I don't know, people staying in the hotel. And very fancy, very posh. It's free, though. You can just walk in, and we're in this really, really nice bar in there. There's a stage with a grand piano on it. We even had J.W. Marshall, the bass player. Our bass player, his brother Richard, was in town, sat in and played piano with us on a gig last week. So lots of fun. They're full band shows, free at the Mansion. Maybe check those out. Gosh, we're playing everywhere else all the time. Check the schedule, philpritchett.com, for all the latest Pritchett news. Well, that's all the time we have today, folks, for the P2 Podcast. Let me know if you got the new Trinidad in your possession out there. I'll come take a look at it, 817-733-5256. Until next time, folks, keep it real out there, man. We love you, fans. Thanks for listening. Phil Pritchett, we'll see you next week on the podcast. Much tougher.